was the type of person who liked being a guard, because it gave him the chance to stop people from going where they wanted to go. "We're here to petition the king," she said frostily. "Now let us pass."
"You," the guard said with a sneer. "Wearing a pair of clogs that my wife would be ashamed of. Clear off!"
"Get out of my way, guard," said Aliena. "Every citizen has the right to petition the king."
"But the poorer sort generally are not foolish enough to try to exercise that right."
"We are not the poorer sort," Aliena blazed. "I am the daughter of the Earl of Sharing, and my brother is his son, so let us pass, or you'll end up rotting in a dungeon."
The guard looked a little less bumptious, but he said smugly, "You can't petition the king, because he's not here. He's at Westminster, as you ought to know, if you are who you say you are."
Aliena was thunderstruck. "But why has he gone to Westminster? He should be here for Easter."
The guard realized she was not a street urchin. "Easter Court is at Westminster. It seems he's not going to do everything exactly the same as the old king did, and why should he?" He was right, of course, but the idea that a new king would follow a different timetable had never occurred to Aliena, who was too young to remember when Henry had been the new king. Despair washed over her. She had thought she knew what to do, and she had been so wrong. She felt like giving up. She shook her head to dispel the sense of doom. This was a setback, not a defeat. Appealing to the king was not the only way to take care of her brother and herself. She had come to Winchester with two purposes, and the second was to find out what had happened to her father. He would know what she should do next.
"Who is here, then?" she said to the guard. "There must be some royal officials. I just want to see my father."
"There's a clerk and a steward up there," the guard replied. "Did you say the Earl of Sharing was your father?"
"Yes."
Her heart missed a beat.
"Do you know anything about him?"
"I know where he is."
"Where?"
"In the jail, right here at the castle."
"So close. Where's the jail?"
The guard jerked a thumb over his shoulder. "Down the hill past the chapel, opposite the main gate." Excluding them from the keep had gratified his mean streak, and now he was willing to be informative. "You'd better see the jailer. His name is Odo, and he's got deep pockets."
Aliena did not understand the remark about deep pockets, but she was too agitated to clarify it. Until this moment her father had been in a vague, distant place called prison, but now, suddenly, he was right here in this very castle. She forgot all about appealing to the king. All she wanted to do was see father. The thought that he was close by, ready to help her, made her feel the danger and uncertainty of the last few months more acutely. She wanted to run into his arms and hear him say, "It's all right now. Everything's going to be all right." The keep stood on a rise in one corner of the compound. Aliena turned and looked down at the rest of the castle. It was a motley collection of stone and wood buildings enclosed by high walls. "Down the hill," the guard had said, "past the chapel." She spotted a neat stone building that looked like a chapel, and opposite the main gate. The main entrance was a gate in the outer wall, permitting the king to come into his castle without first having to enter the city. Opposite that entrance, close to the back wall that separated the castle from the city, was a small stone building that could be the jail. Aliena and Richard hurried down the slope. Aliena wondered how he would be. Did they give people proper food in jail? Her father's own prisoners had always got horsebread and pottage at Earl's Castle, but she had heard that prisoners were sometimes ill-treated elsewhere. She hoped father was all right. Her heart was in her mouth as she crossed the compound. It was a big castle, but it was crowded with buildings, kitchens, stables, and barracks. There were two chapels. Now that she knew the king was away, Aliena could see the signs of his absence, and she noted them distractedly as she wove her way toward the jail. Stray pigs and sheep had wandered in from the suburbs just outside the gate and were rooting around in the rubbish tips. Men-at-arms were lolling about with nothing to do but call out insolent remarks to passing women, and there was some kind of betting game going on in the porch of one of the chapels. The atmosphere of laxity bothered Aliena. She was afraid it might mean her father was not looked after properly. She began to dread what she might find. The jail was a semi-derelict stone building that looked as if it might once have been a house for a royal official, a chancellor or bailiff of some kind, before it fell into disrepair.
The upper story, which had once been the hall, was completely ruined, having lost most of its roof. Only the undercroft remained whole. Here there were no windows, just a big wooden door with iron studs. The door stood slightly ajar. As Aliena hesitated outside, a handsome middle-aged woman in a good-quality cloak passed her, opened the door, and went in. Aliena and Richard followed her. The gloomy interior smelled of old dirt and corruption. The undercroft had once been an open storeroom, but it had later been divided into small compartments by hastily built rubble walls. Somewhere in the depths of the building, a man was moaning monotonously, like a monk chanting services alone in a church. The area just inside the door formed a small lobby, with a chair, a table, and a fire in the middle of the floor. A big, stupid-looking man with a sword at his belt was lackadaisically sweeping the floor. He looked up and greeted the handsome woman. "Good morning, Meg." She gave him a penny and disappeared into the gloom. He looked at Aliena and Richard. "What do you want?"
"I'm here to see my father," Aliena said. "He is the Earl of Shiring."
"No, he's not," said the jailer. "He's just plain Bartholomew now."
"To hell with your distinctions, jailer. Where is he?"
"How much have you got?"
"I've no money, so don't bother asking for a bribe."
"If you've no money, you can't see your father."
He resumed sweeping. Aliena wanted to scream. She was within a few yards of her father, and she was being kept from him. The jailer was big, and he was armed. There was no chance of defying him. But she did not have any money. She had been afraid of this when she saw the woman Meg give him a penny, but that might have been for some special privilege. Obviously not. A penny must be the price of admission. She said, "I'll get a penny and bring it to you as soon as I can. But won't you let us see him now, just for a few moments?"
"Get the penny first," the jailer said.
He turned his back and went on sweeping. Aliena was fighting back tears. She was tempted to yell out a message in the hope that her father would hear her, but she realized that a garbled message might frighten and demoralize him. It would make him anxious without giving him any information. She went to the door, feeling maddeningly impotent. She turned around on the threshold.
"How is he? Just tell me that, please. Is he all right?"
"No. He's not," the jailer said. "He's dying. Now get out of here."
Aliena's vision blurred with tears, and she stumbled through the door. She walked away, not seeing where she was going, and bumped into something, a sheep or a pig, and almost fell. She began to sob. Richard took her arm, and she let him guide her. They went out of the castle by the main gate into the scattered hovels and small fields of the suburbs, and eventually came to a meadow and sat on a tree stump.
"I hate it when you cry, Ali,"
said Richard pathetically. She tried to pull herself together. She had located her father. That was something. She had learned that he was sick. The jailer was a cruel man who was probably exaggerating the seriousness of the illness. All she had to do was find a penny, and she would be able to talk to him and see for herself, and ask him what she should do, for Richard and for father.
"How are we going to get a penny, Richard?" she said.
"I don't know. We've nothing to sell.
No one would lend to us.
You're not tough enough to steal.
We could beg," he said.
That was an idea. There was a prosperous-looking peasant coming down the hill toward the castle on a sturdy black cob. Aliena sprang to her feet and ran to the road. As he drew near, she said,
"Sir, will you give me a penny?"
"Piss off!"
the man snarled, and kicked his horse into a trot. She walked back to the tree stump.
"Beggars usually ask for food or old clothes," she said dejectedly. "I never heard of anyone giving them money."
"Well, how do people get money?"
Richard said. The question had obviously never occurred to him before. Aliena said,
"The king gets money from taxes. Lords have rents. Priests have tithes. Shopkeepers have something to sell. Craftsmen get wages. Peasants don't need money because they have fields.
Apprentices get wages.
So do labourers.
We could work.
Who for?
Winchester is full of little manufactories where they make leather and cloth," Aliena said.
She began to feel optimistic again.
"A city is a good place to find work."
She sprang to her feet.
"Come on.
Let's get started.
Richard still hesitated.
I can't work like a common man, he said. I'm the son of an earl.
Not any more, Aliena said harshly. You heard what the jailer said. You'd better realize that you're no better than anyone else now. He looked sulky and said nothing.
Well, I'm going, she said.
Stay here if you'd like. She walked away from him toward the west gate. She knew his sulks. They never lasted. Sure enough, he caught her up before she reached the city.
Don't be cross, Ali, he said. I'll work. I'm pretty strong, actually. I'll make a very good laborer.
She smiled at him. I'm sure you will. It was not true, but there was no point in discouraging him. They walked down the high street. Aliena recalled that Winchester was laid out and divided up in a very logical way. The southern half, on their right as they walked, was divided into three parts. First, there was the castle, then a district of wealthy homes, then the cathedral close and the bishop's palace in the southeast corner. The northern half, on their left, was also divided into three. The Jews' neighborhood, the middle part where the shops were, and the manufactories in the northeast corner. Aliena led the way down the high street to the eastern end of the city. Then they turned left into a street that had a brook running along it. On one side were normal houses, mostly wooden, a few partly of stone. On the other side was a jumble of improvised buildings, many of them no more than a roof supported by poles, most of them looking as if they might fall down at any minute. In some cases, a little bridge or a few planks led across the brook to the building, but some of the buildings actually straddled the brook. In every building or yard, men and women were doing something that required large quantities of water, washing wool, tanning leather, fulling and dyeing cloth, brewing ale, and other operations that Aliena did not recognize. A variety of unfamiliar smells pricked her nostrils, acrid and yeasty, sulphurous and smoky, woody and rotten. The people all looked terribly busy. Of course, peasants also had a great deal to do, and they worked very hard. But they went about their tasks at a measured pace, and they always had time to stop and examine some curiosity or talk to passers-by. The people in the manufactories never looked up. Their work seemed to take all their concentration and energy. They moved quickly, whether they were carrying sacks or pouring great buckets of water or pounding leather or cloth. As they went about their mysterious tasks in the gloom of their ramshackle huts, they made Aliena think of the demons stirring their cauldrons in pictures of hell. She stopped outside a place where they were doing something she understood, fulling cloth. A muscular-looking woman was drawing water from the brook and pouring it into a huge stone trough lined with lead, stopping every now and again to add a measure of fuller's earth from a sack. Lying in the bottom of the trough, completely submerged, was a length of cloth. Two men with large wooden clubs, called fuller's bats, Aliena recollected, were pounding the cloth in the trough. The process caused the cloth to shrink and thicken, making it more waterproof, and the fuller's earth leached out the oils from the wool. At the back of the premises were stacked bales of untreated cloth, new and loosely woven, and sacks of fuller's earth. Aliena crossed the brook and approached the people working at the trough. They glanced at her and continued working. The ground was wet all around them, and they worked with their feet bare, she noticed. When she realized they were not going to stop and ask her what she wanted, she said loudly, "Is your master here?" The woman replied by jerking her head toward the back of the premises. Aliena beckoned Richard to follow, and went through a gate to a yard where lengths of cloth were drying on wooden frames. She saw the figure of a man bent over one of the frames, arranging the cloth. "I'm looking for the master," she said. He straightened up and looked at her. He was an ugly man with one eye and a slightly hunched back, as if he had been bending over drying frames for so many years that he could no longer stand quite upright. "What is it?" he said. "Are you the master fuller?" "I've been working at it, nigh on 40 years, man and boy, so I hope I'm master," he said. "What do you want?" Aliena realized she was dealing with the type of man who always had to prove how smart he was. She adopted a humble tone and said, "My brother and I want to work. Will you employ us?" There was a pause while he looked her up and down. "Christ Jesus and all the saints, what would I do with you?"
"We'll do anything," Aliena said resolutely. "We need some money.
"You're no good to me," the man said contemptuously, and he turned away to resume his work. Aliena was not going to content herself with that. "Why not?" she said angrily. "We're not scrounging, we want to earn something." He turned to her again. "Please," she said, although she hated to beg. He regarded her impatiently, as he might have looked at a dog, wondering whether to make the effort of kicking it. But she could tell that he was tempted to show her how stupid she was being, and how clever he was by contrast.
"All right," he said with a sigh. "I'll explain it to you. Come with me."
He led them to the trough. The men and the woman were pulling the length of cloth out of the water, rolling it as it emerged. The master spoke to the woman.
"Come here, Lizzie. Show us your hands."
The woman obediently came over and held out her hands. They were rough and red with open sores, where they had got chapped and the skin had broken.
"Feel those," the master said to Aliena.
Aliena touched the woman's hands. They were as cold as snow and very rough, but what was most striking was how hard they were. She looked at her own hands, holding the woman's. They suddenly looked soft and white and very small. The master said, "She's had her hands in water since she was a little un, so she's used to it. You're different. You wouldn't last a morning at this work." Aliena wanted to argue with him and say that she would get used to it, but she was not sure it was true. Before she could say anything, Richard spoke up. "What about me?" he said. "I'm bigger than both those men. I could do that work." It was true that Richard was actually taller and broader than the men who had been wielding the fuller's bats, and he could handle a warhorse, Aliena recalled, so he should be able to pound cloth. The two men finished rolling up the wet cloth, and one of them hoisted the roll onto his shoulder, ready to take it to the yard for drying. The master stopped him. "Let's the young lord feel the weight of the cloth, Harry." The man called Harry lifted the cloth off his shoulder and put it on Richard's. Richard sagged under the weight, straightened up with a mighty effort, paled and then sank to his knees, so that the ends of the roll rested on the ground.
"I can't carry it," he said breathlessly.
The men laughed. The master looked triumphant, and the one called Harry took the cloth back, hoisted it onto his own shoulder with a practiced movement, and carried it away. The master said, "It's a different kind of strength, one that comes from having to work." Aliena was angry. They were mocking her when all she wanted was to find an honest way to earn a penny. The master was thoroughly enjoying making a fool of her, she knew. He would probably keep it up as long as she let him, but he would never employ her or Richard.
"Thank you for your courtesy," she said with heavy sarcasm, and she turned and walked away.
Richard was upset.
"It was heavy because it was so wet," he said. "I wasn't expecting that."
Aliena realized she had to stay cheerful, to keep Richard's morale up.
"That's not the only kind of work there is," she said as she strode along the muddy street. "What else could we do?"
Aliena did not answer immediately. They reached the north wall of the city and turned left, heading west. The poorest houses were here, built up against the wall, often no more than lean-to shacks. And because they had no backyards, the street was filthy. Eventually Aliena said, "Remember how girls used to come to the castle sometimes, when there was no room for them at home anymore, and they had no husband yet? Father would always take them in. They worked in the kitchens or the laundry or the stables, and Father used to give them a penny on saints' days."
"Do you think we could live at Winchester Castle?" Richard said dubiously.
"No, they won't take people in while the king's away. They must have more people than they need. But there are lots of rich folk in the city. Some of them must want servants."
"It's not man's work."
Aliena wanted to say, "Why don't you come up with some ideas yourself, instead of just finding fault with everything I say?" But she bit her tongue and said, "It only wants one of us to work long enough to get a penny. Then we can see Father and ask him what we should do next."
"All right."
Richard was not averse to the idea of only one of them working, especially if the one was likely to be Aliena. They turned left again and entered the section of the city called the Jury. Aliena stopped outside a big house.
"They must have servants in here," she said.
Richard was shocked.
"You wouldn't work for Jews, would you?"
"Why not?"
You don't catch people's heresy the way you catch their fleas, you know.
Richard shrugged and followed her inside. It was a stone house. Like most city homes, it had a narrow frontage but reached back a long way. They were in an entrance hall that was the full width of the house. There was a fire and some benches. The smell from the kitchen made Aliena's mouth water, although it was different from regular cooking with a hint of alien spices. A young girl came from the back of the house and greeted them. She had dark skin and brown eyes, and she spoke respectfully.
"Do you want to see the goldsmith?"
So that was what he was.
"Yes, please,"
said Aliena. The girl disappeared again, and Aliena looked around. A goldsmith would need a stone house, of course, to protect his gold. The door between this room and the back of the house was made of heavy oak planks banded with iron. The windows were narrow, too small for anyone to climb through, even a child. Aliena thought how nerve-wracking it must be to have all your wealth in gold or silver, which could be stolen in an instant, leaving you destitute. Then she reflected that father had been rich with a more normal kind of wealth, land and a title, and yet he had lost everything in a day. The goldsmith came out. He was a small, dark man, and he peered at them, frowning as if he were examining a small piece of jewelry and assessing its worth. After a moment, he seemed to sum them up and said, "You have something you would like to sell."
"You've judged us well, goldsmith,"
Aliena said. "You've guessed we're high-born people who now find themselves destitute. But we have nothing to sell." The man looked worried. "If you're looking for a loan, I fear—"
"We don't expect anyone to lend us money,"
Aliena broke in. "Just as we have nothing to sell, so we have nothing to pawn." He looked relieved. "Then how can I help you?" "Would you take me on as a servant?" He was shocked. "A Christian? Certainly not." He actually shrank back at the thought. Aliena was disappointed.
"Why not?"
she said plaintively.
"It would never do."
She felt rather offended. The idea that someone should find her religion distasteful was demeaning. She remembered the clever phrase she had used to Richard. "You don't catch people's religions the way you catch their fleas," she said. "The people of the town would object." Aliena felt sure he was using public opinion as an excuse, but it was probably true all the same. "I suppose we'd better seek out a rich Christian then," she said. "It's worth a try," the goldsmith said doubtfully. "Let me tell you something candidly. A wise man would not employ you as a servant. You're used to giving orders, and you would find it very hard to be on the receiving end." Aliena opened her mouth to protest, but he held up his hand to stop her. "Oh, I know you're willing, but all your life others have served you, and even now you feel in your heart of hearts that these things should be arranged to please you. High-born people make poor servants. They are disobedient, resentful, thoughtless, touchy, and they think they're working hard, even though they do less than everyone else, so they cause trouble among the rest of the staff." He shrugged. "This is my experience." Aliena forgot that she had been offended by his distaste for her religion. He was the first kindly person she had met since she left the castle. She said, "But what can we do?" "I can only tell you what a Jew would do. He would find something to sell. When I came to this city, I began by buying jewelry from people who needed cash, then melting the silver and selling it to the coiners."
"But where did you get the money to buy the jewelry?"
"I borrowed from my uncle, and paid him interest, by the way."
"But nobody will lend to us."
He looked thoughtful. "What would I have done if I had no uncle? I think I would have gone into the forest and collected nuts, then brought them into the town and sold them to the housewives, who do not have the time to go to the forest, and cannot grow trees in their backyards, because the yards are so full of refuse and filth."
"It's the wrong time of year," Aliena said. "There's nothing growing now."
The goldsmith smiled. "The impatience of youth," he said. "Wait a while." "All right." There was no point in explaining about father. The goldsmith had done his best to be helpful.
"Thank you for your advice."
"Farewell." The goldsmith turned to the back of the house and closed the massive iron-bound door.
Aliena and Richard went out. The goldsmith had been kind, but nevertheless they had spent half a day being turned away from places, and Aliena could not help feeling dejected. Not knowing where to go next, they wandered through the jury and emerged in the high street again. Aliena was beginning to feel hungry. It was dinner time, and she knew that if she was hungry, Richard would be ravenous. They walked aimlessly along the high street, envying the well-fed rats that swarmed in the refuse, until they came to the old royal palace. There they stopped, as all out-of-towners did, to look through the bars at the coiners manufacturing money. Aliena stared at the stacks of silver pennies, thinking that she wanted only one of those, and she could not get it. After a while she noticed a girl of about her own age, standing nearby, smiling at Richard. The girl looked friendly. Aliena hesitated, saw her smile again, and spoke to her. "Do you live here?"
"Yes,"
the girl said. It was Richard she was interested in, not Aliena. Aliena blurted out, "Our father's in the jailhouse, and we're trying to find some way to make a living and get some money to bribe the jailer. Do you know what we might do?" The girl turned her attention from Richard back to Aliena.
"You're penniless, and you want to know how to make some money?"
"That's right. We're willing to work hard. We'll do anything. Can you think of something?" The girl gave Aliena a long, assessing look.
"Yes, I can," she said at last. "I know someone who might help you."
Aliena was thrilled. This was the first person to say yes to her all day.
"When can we see him?" she said eagerly.
"Her?"
"What? It's a woman, and you can probably see her right away if you come with me."
Aliena and Richard exchanged a delighted look. Aliena could hardly believe the change in their luck. The girl turned away and they followed. She led them to a large wooden house on the south side of the high street. Most of the house was at ground level, but it had a small upper story. The girl went up an outside staircase and beckoned them to follow her. The upstairs was a bedchamber. Aliena looked around her with wide eyes. It was more richly decorated and furnished than any of the rooms at the castle had been, even when Mother was alive. The walls were hung with tapestries, the floor was covered with fur rugs, and the bed was surrounded by embroidered curtains. On a chair, like a throne, sat a middle-aged woman in a gorgeous gown. She had been beautiful when she was young, Aliena guessed, although now her face was lined and her hair thin.
"This is Mistress Kate," said the girl.
"Kate, this girl is penniless and her father's in the jailhouse." Kate smiled. Aliena smiled back, but she had to force herself. There was something about Kate that she disliked. Kate said,
"Take the boy to the kitchen and give him a cup of beer while we talk."
The girl took Richard out. Aliena was glad he would get some beer. Perhaps they would give him something to eat as well. Kate said,
"What's your name?"
"Aliena."
"That's unusual, but I like it."
She stood up and came close, a little too close. She took Aliena's chin in her hand.
"You've got a very pretty face."
Her breath smelled of wine.
"Take off your cloak."
Aliena was puzzled by this inspection, but she submitted to it. It seemed harmless, and after this morning's rejections, she did not want to throw away her first decent chance by seeming uncooperative. She shrugged off her cloak, dropped it on a bench, and stood there in the old linen dress the verderer's wife had given her. Kate walked around her. For some reason she seemed impressed.
"My dear girl, you need never want for money or anything else. If you work for me, we'll both be rich."
Aliena frowned. This sounded crazy. All she wanted to do was help with laundry or cooking or sewing. She did not see how she could make anybody rich.
"What sort of work are you talking about?" she said.
Kate was behind her. She ran her hands down Aliena's sides, feeling her hips, and stood close, so that Aliena could feel Kate's breasts pressing against her back.
"You've got a beautiful figure," Kate said, "and your skin is lovely. You're high-born, aren't you?"
"My father was the Earl of Shiring."
"Bartholomew! Well, well, I remember him. Not that he was ever a customer of mine. A very virtuous man, your father. Well, I understand why you're destitute.
So Kate had customers.
What do you sell?
Aliena asked. Kate did not answer directly. She came around in front of Aliena again, looking at her face.
Are you a virgin, dear?
Aliena flushed with shame.
Don't be shy, said Kate. I see you're not.
Well, no matter. Virgins are worth a lot, but they don't last, of course. She put her hands on Aliena's hips, leaned forward, and kissed her forehead.
You're so voluptuous, although you don't know it. By the saints, you're irresistible.
She slid her hand up from Aliena's hip to her bosom, and gently took one breast in her hand, weighing it and squeezing it slightly. Then she leaned forward and kissed Aliena's lips. Aliena understood everything in a flash. Why the girl had smiled at Richard outside the mint where Kate got her money, what Aliena would have to do if she worked for Kate, and what kind of woman Kate was. She felt foolish for not having understood earlier. For a moment she let Kate kiss her. It was so different from what William Hamley had done that she was not in the least repelled. But this was not it. This was not what she would have to do to earn money. She pulled away from Kate's embrace.
You want me to become a whore, she said. A lady of pleasure, my dear, said Kate. Get up late, wear beautiful clothes every day, make men happy and become rich. You'd be one of the best. There's a look about you. You could charge anything, anything. Believe me, I know.
Aliena shuddered. There had always been a whore or two at the castle. It was necessary in a place where there were so many men without their wives, and they had been regarded as the lowest of the low, the humblest of the womenfolk, below even the sweepers. But it was not the low status that made Aliena tremble with disgust. It was the idea of men such as William Hamley walking in and fucking her for a penny. The thought brought back the memory of his big body poised over her as she lay on the floor with her legs apart, shaking with terror and loathing, waiting for him to penetrate her. The scene came back to her with renewed horror, and took away all her poise and confidence. She felt that if she stayed in this house a moment longer it would all happen to her again. She was overcome by a panicky urge to get outside. She backed toward the door. She was frightened of offending Kate, frightened that anyone should be angry with her.
I'm sorry, she mumbled. Please forgive me, but I couldn't do that, really.
Think about it, Kate said cheerfully. Come back if you change your mind. I'll still be here.
Thank you, Aliena said unsteadily.
She found the door at last. She opened it and scuttled out. Still upset, she ran down the stairs into the street and went to the front door of the house. She pushed it open, but she was frightened to go in.
Richard, she called. Richard, come out.
There was no reply. The interior was dimly lit, and she could see nothing but a few vague female figures inside.
"Richard, where are you?"
she screamed hysterically. She realized that passers-by were staring at her, and that made her more anxious. Suddenly Richard appeared with a cup of ale in one hand and a chicken leg in the other.
"What's the matter?"
he said through a mouthful of meat. His tone indicated that he was annoyed at having been disturbed. She grabbed his arm and pulled.
"Come out of there," she said. "It's a whorehouse!"
Several bystanders laughed loudly at this, and one or two called out jeering remarks.
"They might give you some meat," Richard said.
"They want me to be a whore!" she blazed.
All right,"
Richard said. He downed his beer, put the cup on the floor inside the door, and stuffed the remains of the chicken leg inside his shirt.
"Come on!"
Aliena said impatiently, though once again the need to deal with her younger brother had the effect of calming her. He did not seem angered by the idea that someone wanted his sister to become a whore, but he did look regretful at having to leave a place where there was chicken and beer to be had for the asking. Most of the bystanders walked on, seeing that the fun was over, but one remained. It was the well-dressed woman they had seen in the jailhouse. She had given the jailer a penny, and he had called her Meg. She was looking at Aliena with an expression of curiosity mingled with compassion. Aliena had developed an aversion to being stared at, and she looked away angrily. Then the woman spoke to her. "You're in trouble, aren't you?" she said. A note of kindness in Meg's voice made Aliena turn back.
"Yes,"
she said after a pause.
"We're in trouble.
I saw you at the jailhouse. My husband is in prison. I visit him every day."
"Why were you there?"
"Our father is there."
"But you didn't go inside. We haven't any money to pay the jailer."
Meg looked over Aliena's shoulder at the whorehouse door. "Is that what you're doing here? Trying to get money?"
"Yes, but I didn't know what it was until..."
"You poor thing," Meg said. "My Annie would have been your age if she'd lived. Why don't you come to the jailhouse with me tomorrow morning? And between us we'll see if we can persuade Odo to act like a Christian and take pity on two destitute children."
"Oh, that would be wonderful,"
Aliena said. She was touched. There was no guarantee of success, but the fact that someone was willing to help brought tears to her eyes. Meg was still looking hard at her. "Have you had any dinner?"
"No. Richard got something in that place."
"You'd better come to my house. I'll give you some bread and meat." She noticed Aliena's wary look and added, "And you don't have to do anything for it." Aliena believed her.
"Thank you," she said. "You're very kind.
Not many people have been kind to us. I don't know how to thank you."
"No need," she said.
"Come with me." Meg's husband was a wool merchant. At his house in the south of town, at his stall in the market on market days, and at the great annual fair held on St. Giles's Hill, he bought fleeces, brought to him by peasants from the surrounding countryside. He crammed them into great wool sacks, each holding the fleece of 240 sheep, and stored them in the barn at the back of his house. Once a year, when the Flemish weavers sent their agents to buy the soft, strong English wool, Meg's husband would sell it all and arrange for the sacks to be shipped via Dover and Boulogne to Bruges and Ghent, where the fleece would be turned into top-quality cloth and sold all over the world, at prices far too high for the peasants who kept the sheep. So Meg told Aliena and Richard over dinner, with that warm smile which said that whatever happens, there's no need for people to be unkind to one another. Her husband had been accused of selling short weight, a crime the city took very seriously, for its prosperity was based on a reputation for honest dealing. Judging by the way Meg spoke of it, Aliena thought he was probably guilty. His absence had made little difference to the business, though. Meg had simply taken his place. In winter there was not much to do anyway. She had made a trip to Flanders, assured all her husband's agents that the enterprise was functioning normally, and carried out repairs to the barn, enlarging it a little at the same time. When shearing began, she would buy wool just as he had done. She knew how to judge its quality and set a price. She had already been admitted into the Merchants' Guild of the city, despite the stain on her husband's reputation, for there was a tradition of merchants helping each other's families in times of trouble, and anyway, he had not yet been proved guilty. Richard and Aliena ate her food and drank her wine and sat by her fire, talking, until it began to get dark outside. Then they went back to the priory to sleep. Aliena had nightmares again. This time she dreamed about her father. In the dream he was sitting on a throne in the prison, as tall and pale and authoritative as ever, and when she went to see him, she had to bow as if he were the king. Then he spoke to her accusingly, saying she had abandoned him here in prison and gone to live in a whorehouse. She was outraged by the injustice of the charge, and said angrily that he had abandoned her. She was going to add that he had left her to the mercy of William Hamley, but she was reluctant to tell her father what William had done to her. Then she saw that William was also in the room, sitting on a bed and eating cherries from a bowl. He spat a cherry pip at her, and it hit her cheek, stinging her. Her father smiled, and then William started throwing soft cherries at her. They splattered her face and dress, and she began to cry, because although the dress was old, it was the only one she had, and now it was blotched all over with cherry juice, like bloodstains. She felt so unbearably sad in the dream that when she woke up and discovered it was not real, she felt an enormous sense of relief, even though the reality, that she was homeless and penniless, was much worse than being pelted with soft cherries. The light of dawn was seeping through the cracks in the walls of the guest house. All around her, people were waking up and beginning to move around. Soon the monks came in, opened the doors and the shutters, and called everyone to breakfast. Aliena and Richard ate hurriedly, then went to Meg's house. She was ready to leave. She had made a spicy beef stew to warm up for her husband's dinner, and Aliena told Richard to carry the heavy pot for her. Aliena wished they had something to give father. She had not thought of it, but even if she had, she could not have bought anything. It was awful to think they could do nothing for him. They walked up the high street, entered the castle by the back gate, and then walked past the keep and down the hill to the jail. Aliena recalled what Odo had told her yesterday when she had asked whether father was all right. "No, he's not," the jailer had said. "He's dying." She had thought he was exaggerating to be cruel, but now she began to worry. She said to Meg, "Is there anything wrong with my father?" "I don't know, dear," Meg said. "I've never seen him." "The jailer said he was dying." "That man is as mean as a cat. He probably said it just to make you miserable. Anyway, you'll know in a moment." Aliena was not comforted, despite Meg's good intentions, and she was full of dread as she walked through the doorway into the evil-smelling gloom of the jail. Odo was warming his hands at the fire in the middle of the lobby. He nodded at Meg and looked at Aliena. "Have you got the money?" he said.
"I'll pay for them," Meg said. "Here's 2 pennies. One for me and one for them."
A crafty look came over Odo's stupid face, and he said, "It's 2 pence for them. 1 penny for each."
"Don't be such a dog," Meg said. "You let them both in, or I'll make trouble for you with the Merchant Guild, and you'll lose the job."
All right, no need for threats," he said grumpily. He pointed to an archway in the stone wall to their right. "Bartholomew is that way."
Meg said, "You'll need a light."
She drew 2 candles from the pocket of her cloak and lit them at the fire, then gave one to Aliena. Her face looked troubled.
"I hope all will be well," she said, and she kissed Aliena.
Then she went quickly through the opposite arch.
"Thank you for the penny,"
Aliena called after her, but Meg had disappeared into the gloom. Aliena peered apprehensively in the direction Odo had indicated. Holding the candle up high, she went through the archway and found herself in a tiny square vestibule. The light of the candle showed 3 heavy doors, each barred on the outside. Odo called out,
"Straight in front of you."
Aliena said,
"Lift the bar, Richard."
Richard took the heavy wooden bar out of its brackets and stood it up against the wall. Aliena pushed the door open and sent up a quick, silent prayer. The cell was dark but for the light of her candle. She hesitated in the doorway, peering into the moving shadows. The place smelled like a privy. A voice said,
"Who is it?"
Aliena said,
"Father?"
She made out a dark figure sitting on the straw-covered floor.
"Aliena?"
There was incredulity in the voice.
"Is that Aliena?"
It sounded like father's voice, but older. Aliena went closer, holding the candle up. He looked up at her. The candlelight caught his face, and she gasped in horror. He was hardly recognizable. He had always been a thin man, but now he looked like a skeleton. He was filthy, dirty, and dressed in rags.
"Aliena," he said, "it is you."
His face twisted into a smile, and it was like the grin of a skull. Aliena burst into tears. Nothing could have prepared her for the shock of seeing him so transformed. It was the most dreadful thing imaginable. She knew instantly that he was dying. The vile Odo had told the truth. But he was still alive, still suffering, and painfully pleased to see her. She had been determined to stay calm, but now she lost control completely and fell to her knees in front of him, weeping with great racking sobs that came from deep inside her. He leaned forward and put his arms around her, patting her back, as if he were comforting a child over a grazed knee or a broken toy.
"Don't cry," he said gently, "not when you've made your father so happy."
Aliena felt the candle taken from her hand.
"Father said, and is that tall young man, my Richard?"
Yes, Father, Richard said stiffly. Aliena put her arms around Father and felt his bones like sticks in a sack. He was wasting away. There was no flesh beneath his skin. She wanted to say something to him, some words of love or comfort, but she could not speak for sobbing.
Richard, he was saying, you've grown. Have you got a beard yet?
It's just started, Father, but it's very fair. Aliena realized that Richard was on the edge of tears and struggling to maintain his composure. He would feel humiliated if he broke down in front of Father, and Father would probably tell him to snap out of it and be a man, which would make it worse. Worrying about Richard, she stopped crying. With an effort, she pulled herself together. She hugged Father's appallingly thin body once more. Then she withdrew from his embrace, wiped her eyes, and blew her nose on her sleeve.
"Are you both all right?" Father said.
His voice was slower than it used to be, and it quavered occasionally.
"How have you managed? Where have you been living? They wouldn't tell me anything about you. It was the worst torture they could have devised. But you seem fine, fit and healthy. This is wonderful."
Mention of torture made Aliena wonder whether he had suffered physical torments. But she did not ask him. She was afraid of what he might tell her. Instead, she answered his question with a lie. "We're fine, Father." She knew that the truth would be devastating to him. It would destroy this moment of happiness and fill the last days of his life with an agony of self-reproach. "We've been living at the castle, and Matthew has been taking care of us."
"But you can't live there any more," he said. "The king has made that fat oaf, Percy Hamley, the earl now. He'll have the castle."
So he knew about that. "It's all right," she said. "We've moved out." He touched her dress, the old linen shift that the verderer's wife had given her.
"What's this?" he said sharply. "Have you sold your clothes?"
He was still perceptive, Aliena noted. It would not be easy to deceive him. She decided to tell him part of the truth.
"We left the castle in a hurry, and we haven't any clothes."
"Where's Matthew now? Why isn't he with you?"
She had been afraid of this question. She hesitated. It was only a momentary pause, but he noticed it.
"Come! Don't try to hide anything from me," he said with something of his old authority. "Where's Matthew?"
"He was killed by the Hamleys," she said, "but they did us no harm." She held her breath. Would he believe her?
"Poor Matthew," he said sorrowfully. "He was never a fighting man. I hope he went straight to heaven."
He had accepted her story. She was relieved. She moved the conversation off this dangerous ground. "We decided to come to Winchester to ask the king to make some provision for us, but he—"
"No use," Father interrupted briskly, before she could explain why they had failed to see the king. "He wouldn't do anything for you."
Aliena was hurt by his dismissive tone. She had done her best against the odds, and she wanted him to say, "Well done," not, "That was a waste of time." He had always been quick to correct and slow to praise. "I ought to be used to it," she thought. Submissively, she said, "What should we do now, Father?" He shifted his sitting position, and there was a clanking noise. Aliena realized with a shock that he was in chains.
He said, "I had one chance to hide some money away. It wasn't much of a chance, but I had to take it. I had 50 bezants in a belt under my shirt. I gave the belt to a priest."
50?
Aliena was surprised. A bezant was a gold coin. They were not minted in England, but came from Byzantium. She had never seen more than one at a time. A bezant was worth 24 silver pennies. 50 were worth... She could not figure it out.
"Which priest?" said Richard practically.
"Father Rafe, of the Church of St. Michael, near the North Gate."
"Is he a good man?"
Aliena asked.
"I hope so. I really don't know. On the day the Hamleys brought me to Winchester, before they locked me up in here, I found myself alone with him, just for a few moments, and I knew it would be my only chance. I gave him the belt and begged him to keep it for you. 50 bezants is worth 5 pounds of silver."
5 pounds. As this news sank in, Aliena realized that the money would transform their existence.
They would not be destitute. They would no longer have to live from hand to mouth. They could buy bread and a pair of boots to replace those painful clogs, and even a couple of cheap ponies if they needed to travel. It did not solve all their problems, but it took away that frightening feeling of living constantly on the edge of a life-or-death crisis. She would not have to be thinking all the time of how they were going to survive. Instead, she could turn her attention to something constructive, like getting father out of this awful place. She said, "When we've got the money, what shall we do? We must get you freed." "I'm not coming out," he said harshly. "Forget about that. If I weren't dying already, they'd have hanged me."
Aliena gasped. How could he talk that way?
"Why are you shocked?" he said. "The king has to get rid of me, but this way I won't be on his conscience."
Richard said, "Father, this place is not well guarded while the king is away. With a few men I believe I could break you out."
Aliena knew that was not going to happen. Richard did not have the ability or the experience to organize a rescue, and he was too young to persuade men to follow him. She was afraid Father would wound Richard by pouring scorn on the proposal, but all he said was, "Don't even think about it. If you break in here, I'll refuse to go out with you." Aliena knew there was no point in arguing with him once he had made up his mind, but it broke her heart to think of him ending his days in this stinking jail. However, it occurred to her that there was a lot she could do to make him more comfortable here. She said, "Well, if you're going to stay here, we can clean the place up and get fresh rushes. We'll bring hot food in for you every day. We'll get some candles, and perhaps we could borrow a Bible for you to read. You can have a fire."
"Stop!"
he said. "You're not going to do any of that. I will not have my children wasting their lives hanging around a jailhouse waiting for an old man to die." Tears came to Aliena's eyes again.
"But we can't leave you like this."
He ignored her, which was his normal response to people who foolishly contradicted him. "Your dear mother had a sister, your Aunt Edith. She lives in the village of Huntley, on the road to Gloucester, with her husband, who is a knight. You are to go there." It occurred to Aliena that they could still see Father at intervals, and perhaps he would permit his in-laws to make him more comfortable. She tried to remember Aunt Edith and Uncle Simon. She had not seen them since Mama died. She had a vague recollection of a thin, nervous woman like her mother, and a big, hearty man who ate and drank a lot. "Will they look after us?" she said uncertainly.
"Of course. They're your kin."
Aliena wondered whether that was sufficient reason for a modest knightly family to welcome two large and hungry youngsters into their home. But Father said it would be all right, and she trusted him.
"What will we do?"
she said.
"Richard will be a squire to his uncle, and learn the arts of knighthood. You will be lady-in-waiting to Aunt Edith until you marry."
As they talked, Aliena felt as if she had been carrying a heavy weight for miles, and had not noticed the pain in her back until she put the burden down. Now that Father was taking charge, it seemed to her that the responsibility of the last few days had been far too much for her to bear, and his authority and ability to control the situation, even when he was sick in jail, gave her comfort and took the edge off her sorrow, for it seemed unnecessary to worry about the person who was in charge. Now he became even more magisterial.
"Before you leave me, I want you both to swear an oath."
Aliena was shocked. He had always counseled against oath-taking. "To swear an oath is to put your soul at risk," he would say. "Never take an oath unless you're sure you would rather die than break it." And he was here because of an oath. The other barons had broken their word and accepted Stephen as king, but Papa had refused. He would rather die than break his oath, and here he was, dying.
"Give me your sword," he said to Richard.
Richard drew his sword and handed it over. Father took it and reversed it, holding out the hilt.
"Kneel down."
Richard knelt in front of Father.
"Put your hand on the hilt."
Father paused as if gathering his strength. Then his voice rang out like a peal of bells.
"Swear by Almighty God and Jesus Christ and all the saints that you will not rest until you are Earl of Shiring and Lord of all the lands I ruled."
Aliena was surprised and somewhat awestruck.
She had expected Father to demand some general promise, such as to tell the truth always and fear God. But no, he was giving Richard a very specific task, one that might take a lifetime. Richard took a deep breath and spoke with a shake in his voice. "I swear, by Almighty God and Jesus Christ, and all the saints, that I will not rest until I am Earl of Shiring and Lord of all the lands you ruled." Papa sighed, as if he had completed an onerous task. Then he surprised Aliena again. He turned and proffered the hilt of the sword to her. "Swear by Almighty God and Jesus Christ, and all the saints, that you will take care of your brother Richard until he has fulfilled his vow." A sense of doom swamped Aliena. This was to be their fate, then. Richard would avenge Father, and she would take care of Richard. For her it would be a mission of revenge, for if Richard became Earl, William Hamley would lose his inheritance. It flashed across her mind that no one had asked her how she wanted to spend her life. But the foolish thought was gone as fast as it came. This was her destiny, and it was a fit and proper one. She was not unwilling, but she knew this was a fateful moment, and she had a sense of doors closing behind her, and the path of her life being fixed irrevocably. She put her hand on the hilt of the sword, and took the oath. Her voice surprised her by its strength and resolution. "I swear by Almighty God and Jesus Christ and all the saints, that I will take care of my brother Richard until he has fulfilled his vow." She crossed herself. It was done. "I've sworn an oath," she thought, "and I must die rather than break my word." The thought gave her a kind of angry satisfaction.
"There," Father said, and his voice sounded weak again. "Now you need never come to this place again."
Aliena could not believe he meant it. "Uncle Simon can bring us to see you now and again, and we can make sure you're warm and fed."
"No," he said sternly. "You have a task to fulfill. You're not going to waste your energies visiting a jail."
She heard that "don't argue" note in his voice again, but she could not help protesting against the harshness of his decision. "Then let us come again just once to bring you a few comforts."
"I want no comforts."
"Please,
never."
She gave up. He was always at least as hard on himself as he was on everyone else. "Very well," she said, and it came out in a sob.
"Now you'd better go," he said.
"Already?"
"Yes. This is a place of despair and corruption and death. Now that I've seen you, and I know you're well, and you've promised to rebuild what we have lost, I'm content. The only thing that could destroy my happiness would be to see you wasting your time visiting a jailhouse. Now go."
"Papa, no," she protested, although she knew it was no use.
"Listen," he said, and his voice softened at last. "I've lived an honorable life, and now I'm going to die. I've confessed my sins. I'm ready for eternity. Pray for my soul. Go!"
Aliena leaned forward and kissed his brow. Her tears fell freely on his face.
"Goodbye, Father dear," she whispered.
She got to her feet. Richard bent down and kissed him.
"Goodbye, Father,"
he said unsteadily.
"May God bless you both, and help you keep your vows," Father said.
Richard left him the candle. They went to the door. At the threshold, Aliena turned and looked back at him in the unsteady light. His fleshless face was set in an expression of calm determination that was very familiar. She looked at him until tears obscured her vision. Then she turned away, went through the lobby of the jailhouse, and stumbled out into the open air. 3. Richard led the way. Aliena was stunned with grief. It was as if Father had already died, but it was worse, for he was still suffering. She heard Richard asking for directions, but she paid no attention. She gave no thought to where they were going until he stopped outside a small wooden church with a lean-to hovel beside it. Looking around, Aliena saw that they were in a poor district of small tumble-down houses and filthy streets,
in which fierce dogs chased rats through the refuse and barefoot children played in the mud.
"This must be St. Michael's," Richard said.